If you are new here, then you're joining us partway through a three-week mini-series. So we're taking three Sundays to look at the whole subject of finances. We've entitled it Financial Freedom. And we really want to take a biblical approach to handling money. And I guess a big part of the motivation for that is all that's going on around us in the world. So you can't fail to have heard of and seen the headlines about cutbacks and trade deficits and redundancies. The kind of list goes on and on. It's in the papers and all over the news. And part of the problem is that so much of that sort of comes at us, and it can be overwhelming and very depressing even. Even the amount of jargon, the number of anachronisms that are used, if I can say the word, anachronisms that are used, can become all really kind of confusing. So I keep hearing news bulletins that go a bit like this. In a joint report out today from the EU, ECB, IMF, and the CBI, they said that the increase in VAT would lead to a doubling of the RPI, which in turn would have a negative impact on the CPI index. In response, a spokesman from the RAC and AA said that we'd now need to get greater MPG from our SUVs. The housing minister said that this would lead to a doubling of the SVR, requiring us to get advice from the CAB, move into the YMCA, and watch CBBC on the TV in our PJs. And that's just reports like that constantly the whole time, don't you? You're sort of overwhelmed by the whole thing. I guess that would all be all right if that was just on the news, but we're seeing it in reality in our lives around us. Some of us here this evening are fortunate enough to be car owners. We can't afford to drive our cars anywhere anymore, but we are car owners. Food costs seem to be spiraling almost out of control, don't they? The jobs market is shrinking. Some of us are looking for jobs even now. Government cutbacks are really starting to kick in. Some of us have been unemployed for a while, and some of us are facing the spectre of redundancy. And I guess the big question hanging over all of that is, how should we respond as a church family? You know, what's a biblical response to the times in which we find ourselves? So that's what I want to do tonight. I want to look at some answers from Scripture that aren't just like scrabbling around like the world is, but are really firmly rooted in truth from God. So we're going to look together at first sight what might seem an interesting passage to choose, but one I think has got real relevance for us. So if you've got a Bible, do you want to turn with me to Galatians chapter 6? If you don't have one, don't worry. It'll come up on the screen behind me. And obviously, I'll read it out for us. Just if you're flicking through to it in Galatians chapter 6, let me give you a little bit of the context. Paul's writing to not just one church, but a group of churches in the province of Galatia, which would have been in Asia Minor, sort of northern Turkey is roughly the kind of area. And he's writing to sort out some problems they've been having with legalism and where they've got all sort of bound up in different rules and regulations. And as Paul's often sort of pattern of writing, he writes the first half with quite a lot of theology, and then in the second half becomes increasingly practical. And it's in that second half that we find ourselves, in the last chapter, chapter 6. And in this section, interestingly, he's not primarily talking about handling money. He's actually talking about what to do if someone gets caught up in some kind of addictive and difficult sin situations. However, having said that, there are some principles there that are good, solid biblical principles that apply to all sorts of situations, and it's those that I really want to pull out this evening. So if you want to turn to Galatians chapter 6, we're going to be reading from verse 1. Just as we go through, the other thing to bear in mind is that there's an apparent contradiction in these verses. Some verses seem to sort of contradict one another, and see if you can pick them out just as I read through these 10 verses. Galatians 6, 1, he says this: "Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. One who is taught the word must share all good things with the one who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially those to those who are of the household of faith." Great. I wonder, did you spot it? Did you spot the apparent contradiction, things that don't seem to add up in those 10 verses? Take a look at verse 2, and it says this: bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Fair enough. And then verse 5, for each will have to bear his own load. So Paul's saying, bear one another's burdens on the one hand, but equally, each of us has to carry our own load. Well, which is it, Paul? Sort of make your mind up on this. Well, of course, the answer is that the two words are different. The words in the original language, the Greek, were different for burden and load. Burden is the Greek word baros, which means a really heavy object or oppressive force. So if I'm trying to, I don't know, carry a filing cabinet by myself or a sofa, that would be a baros. It's a really heavy thing. I've got this photo here coming up on the screen. There's a man under that lot. I think this would constitute a baros. That's 24 crates this guy is carrying, and I think the health and safety executive would probably have something to say about that. That kind of load would be a baros. It's one that needs to be shared with others. Meanwhile, the word for load is the Greek word fortion, which is the same word that's used to describe a Roman soldier's kit bag, basically his rucksack of personal equipment. I've got a photo of what one would have looked like. Obviously, it's not a photo of an original one, but it's a photo of what one would have looked like. This is what the soldiers would have carried around with them. And it's designed to be carried by the individual. So what's Paul saying? Well, he's saying that some things in life are a baros, a burden too great for us to bear alone, whilst other things, it's like they're part of our personal kit. They're our individual responsibility. And in this context, Paul is saying that sometimes people get themselves so caught up in sin, maybe an addictive practice or make foolish choices, that we need to not stand on the sidelines and tut-tut their behaviour, but get in there and help them and support them and maybe challenge and confront them if necessary. That having been said, it's equally true that each person has to give an account for the life that they lead. And one day we'll stand before God and have to account for our actions and our choices that we've made. And of course, the context is dealing with sin, but the principle extends beyond that. You can see that how it would apply to different areas. In the same way, this same passage talks about reaping and sowing. Well, that's a principle written into the context of sin, but applies much, much wider than that. So, for instance, if you sow into a healthy lifestyle, well, then you reap the benefits of a healthy lifestyle. In the same way, carry each other's burdens and each one bear his own load is relevant beyond the issue of sin. So take, for instance, our emotional lives. I might go through a bereavement or a period, extended period of sickness that affects me deeply. You know, not like a mild sickness, not man flu, like proper illness, all right? That's a baros, that's a heavy burden. And I need the support of others to help me get through that time, to encourage me or challenge me if I'm becoming self-piteous or whatever it is that I need. But of course, not every emotional issue is like that. It might be, for instance, that I am incredibly grumpy with my family first thing in the morning when I get up, hypothetically speaking, of course. And that's my fortune, that's my issue, that's in my kit bag. I'm making choices there that I need to deal with, and one day I'll have to give an account to God for my behaviour. So how does this all then relate to the area of finance? Well, I want to pull out for us just some practical applications of this biblical principle. And let's take, first of all, this whole area of carrying our own load. Okay, so that's the first one we're going to look at. Just as we do that, is everybody warm enough in here? Is it starting to get cold? You all right? No? You're good. Okay, all right. Somebody poke Steve and he'll go turn up the heating if we need to. All right? Okay, let's look at this first one here. This is 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11 and 12. It says this: but we urge you, this is Paul writing again, work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. Wherever possible, work. This is a little bit of a sensitive issue, so hear me out on this one. According to Scripture, the default position, the general rule for Christians, is that we should work. Now, obviously, Paul isn't saying just do manual labor. Instead, he's saying do whatever kind of work that you can reasonably do. Looking for jobs, or maybe starting your own business, whatever it might be, in order that we can provide for ourselves. One of the principles that Bethel, a church in the States, operates off is that we will do whatever we can to support you, but we won't work harder on your problems than you do. In other words, that the bulk of the responsibility for your own life rests with you. And the way you manage your time through to finding employment, whatever it might be, you've got to take responsibility for your own life. We're not going to come and be your saviours, but we will help you however we can. And I think that's a great principle. And when I first came to Bedford, I was unemployed, living for several months on income support. And I found it, to be honest, a really difficult time, particularly to begin with, because there was, to some extent, some stigma attached to being unemployed, as well as all the obvious financial pressures. But also, perhaps the hardest thing was knowing what to do with my time. If you've ever known unemployment or are unemployed at the moment, you'll know that can be one of the biggest challenges. What do you do with your time? How do you best use it? And I was sort of chewing on this, being concerned about it, until I realized that I wasn't failing because I didn't have a job, but rather that God had other work for me to do in that season. Put another way, according to the Bible, work isn't necessarily the same thing as having a job. Work and having a job aren't always the same thing. So for instance, Adam and Eve worked in the garden at the beginning, but I doubt very much that they were on PAYE. You know, I don't see that. I've looked right the way through, you know, the early chapters of Genesis. I can find no evidence of any sort of job interview whatsoever in there. There certainly didn't seem to be any work dress code, you know. Naked gardening, inherently dangerous as far as I'm concerned. But I have to watch it, actually, because my mind thinks of a whole load of one-liners on that subject. Sadly, none of them are appropriate. Anyway, so Adam and Eve are in the garden, and they're working, but they don't have jobs. Work isn't always the same thing as employment. That meant for me in Bedford, unemployed, the responsibility was on me to do everything I could to provide for myself by looking for a job. And in the meantime, to do meaningful labour, to use my time wisely. That was my personal responsibility, and then God's responsibility was to provide for me by whatever means. So my main work, my main job was to apply for jobs. So I would start work at 9 a.m., and it was my aim that every single day I would apply for one new job. So handwritten application forms, I didn't even have a computer, just had a typewriter, one finger at a time, typing out my applications. And then in the afternoons, at 2 o'clock, so I'd give myself a lunch break, at 2 o'clock till 5 o'clock, I volunteered. And I volunteered for this crazy brand new church called the King's Arms. That at that stage, I kid you not, was run out of Dave Stroud's shed at the end of his garden. Dave and Philippa Stroud started the King's Arms, ran it from their shed. We didn't even have a telephone. I would have to use to walk back into the house in order to make a phone call. The nerve centre, the administrative hub for the King's Arms project was Philippa's dining room table. You know, that was the kind of operation we were in. If I needed to get some photocopying done, I'd have to drive to Putney and see if I could borrow Woodside's photocopier. But I believe that volunteering in those sort of embryonic days of the King's Arms was what God had for me in that time, and hopefully I was of some use to the church back then. So my responsibility was to apply for jobs and volunteer. Let me ask you, what's your responsibility in this season of life that you find yourself in? Some of us here, through industry turndown or cutbacks, have been unable to find jobs. But whilst you've not had a job, you've never stopped working. If that's you, can I commend you for your faithful service to Jesus? Keep going. You may not have had a job, but my goodness, you've worked. And one day you'll be fully paid. Well done. Others of us here are slogging away at a job that we wouldn't have chosen. But we turn up on time every day and make the phone calls and change the bedpans or clean the floors or fight with a photocopier because we want to be providing for ourselves. Others of us are faithfully serving in the home, preparing meals, caring for children, getting Play-Doh out of the carpet, all that's involved in a domestic environment. Can I say to you all, well done. You've been a faithful servant. You've been paid in part, but one day you will be fully paid. And the reality is that some of us here may not have a job in 6 months' time. That's just the harsh economic climate. But I want to say to you, even if you don't have a job, there is work to be done. You know, we're in the business in this church of extending the kingdom of God, and you're unlikely to be made redundant from that. There are 97,000 people in this town, in Bedford and Kempston, who don't know Jesus. There's a lot of work to be done. And so can I ask you, whatever stage of life you're in, make sure that you're meaningfully employed. Don't waste your life. In 1 Thessalonians, this same passage, Paul warns against idleness. It's not the best way for us to live. If someone was to follow you throughout your day, would they look back, you know, 11 o'clock as you're headed to bed or whatever, would they look back and say, that was a day well spent? Or would they say, the guy's wasting his life? You're better than that. Make sure that you are meaningfully employed in whatever way. So that's the first thing. I'll be briefer with the second one. The second principle in terms of taking personal responsibility for our finances and our lives is this. Is wherever possible, deal with debt. Our society is to some extent built on the buy now, pay later approach. And the risk is that we fill up our lives with stuff instead of with meaning. As someone once said, the danger is that we spend all our time buying things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like. That's kind of a definition of futility right there. And the danger is, of course, that we overextend ourselves financially in order to pay for those things. Proverbs 22 verse 7 doesn't pull any punches when it says this. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. Strong language there. Slave of the lender. Does that mean that all debt is wrong? No. That's not what I'm saying. We've got a £1.3 million mortgage on this very building. I said 1.2 this morning. Royden came up and said, actually it's 100,000 more than that. So if you were here this morning and thought, hang on, this morning it was 1.2, now it's 1.3. That's really bad interest rate. No, I got it wrong this morning, all right? So I'm not saying that all debt is wrong, but what I am saying is that debt that is out of control is not good for us. There's a difference. Spiraling debt can feel like a form of slavery. And some of us will know that firsthand. Financial pressures are put down as the number one cause for marriage breakup. There is no such thing as 48 easy payments. Every payment every month is costly. Proverbs 6 advises those who are in debt to do whatever they can to get out. It says, run like a gazelle from debt. I'm not entirely sure what run like a gazelle means, but I think it means run fast. It means head in the opposite direction. If debt has got a stranglehold on you, can I implore you, don't stick your head in the sand. Maybe trying to pay off one credit card with another. Take some drastic action. If necessary, get some plastic surgery and chop those cards up. Deal with it. But I also didn't want to just stand up today and talk about this without offering some practical help and support to people. So what I've done this evening is that I've arranged for some people from our finance team to be available at the end of the meeting. We have a number of people who volunteer month in, month out to pore over spreadsheets and figures and check everything's running okay with our finances. And a couple of them are available here tonight. And they're going to be standing at the back by the welcome banner. So I've got Edmund and Lindsley are both going to be available. Should you want to go and ask them about anything financially related? Now, they're not here as accountants or even as debt advice counselors, but they can help you with some basic budgeting skills, and also we've got contacts with a Christian debt advice counseling center in Bedford so that we can try and help put people in touch with where they might get some support and some help. I'm saying if you're in debt, let's be practical about it. Let's deal with it as best we possibly can. So that's the second thing. The third way that we can take responsibility for our own lives is this. Wherever possible, save. Proverbs 21. Proverbs is a great book if you want to have a look at the issues of money. Proverbs 21:20 says this, precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. In other words, he has nothing left. Wherever you can, save. Let me qualify this a little bit. In my experience, all of us fit on a spectrum, a continuum of savers and spenders. So at one end would be those people who are naturally savers, and at the other end would be those people who are naturally, their first instinct is to spend. I have four children, and it's very interesting, the responses to receiving their pocket money. Some children will instantly think, right, what can I spend this on? The others will think, ha-ha, I'm now going to add this to my hoard. And there's just different responses from different kids. I wonder, which one are you? You know, where would you put yourself on that spectrum? If savers are up this end and spenders are down this end, I'll tell you where I would be. I would be out the doors and over that way instinctively. I am naturally a saver. I would naturally cling on to resources. And I want to say to you that there are pitfalls at either end of the spectrum, that the healthy place is to be somewhere actually in the middle. You see, as a saver, I'm the kind of person that wants to cling on to everything. So I'm the sort of person that stays in a travel lodge and then removes every single one of those little shampoo bottles. I'm that sort of person. If I go to McDonald's and accidentally we get extra ketchup sachets, I'm thinking, I'm having those, taking those ketchup sachets home with me. That's what I am like. Just to let you know how extreme it is, like I said, it's birthday season in the household at the moment. We have 5 birthdays in our family in 5 weeks. So it is intense and it is expensive. And so I'm just toying with the idea of how we could help take advantage of this situation. So I'm just mulling it over with Emma and saying, well, instead of, when the family say what to buy for the kids, instead of saying these plastic toys that just break in 5 minutes, why don't we get the family to get us some practical things that will be helpful around the house? So when my parents come and say, Zachary's going to be 5 pretty soon, any ideas what he'd like for his birthday? I could reply, do you know what? I think what he'd really like is a set of masonry drill bits and a packet of dishwasher tablets. He'd be delighted with those. And then Emma began to point out there might be some pitfalls to this. She said, your plan with Anna, that's not going to work so well. Don't you think your daughter might be slightly disappointed on her 10th birthday to discover that you have persuaded the entire family to club together and buy her a lawnmower? There might be some implications to that. And so I followed the scenario through and realized that, obviously, if I did that, then I would be forced to repay her when my birthday comes around. So that would mean that members of my family came and asked me, what would you like for your birthday, Paul? I would be forced to say, what I'd really like is a pair of pink leggings and some lip gloss. And something about that just didn't sit right, so I had to can the idea. But that's the way my mind works. How can we hoard on to things? How can we cling on to things? How can we save in whatever way? If you're up this end of the spectrum with me, can I gently and lovingly say to you, your challenge is going to be generosity and faith. To be generous with the resources that you've got and exercise faith with your finances. It says in Romans, the just shall live by faith. It doesn't say anywhere the just shall live by their savings. Our confidence needs to be in God, not what we've got stored up. So that's up that end. If you're feeling a bit cocky and a bit confident, let me talk to people that are down this end. If you are naturally a spender, there are inherent problems up that end too. Like it says in verse 20 there, a foolish man devours everything he has. In other words, to spend everything is foolish. To not put anything aside for a rainy day is unwise. Because guess what? Rainy days do come along. Watch out that you don't overstretch yourself. As someone once said, it's time to act your wage. It's time to act within your means. Do all that you can to live off less than you earn. And draw a line between what you want and what you need. Try to save even the smallest amount each month for emergencies. And I realize that for some situations that just isn't possible. Things are so tight that there's plenty of month left at the end of the money, and that's a reality for many of us. But where you can, it's got to be the best principle to save just a little bit. And so I'd say to you, if the challenge up this end is to operate with generosity and faith, the challenge up this end is going to be to exercise good stewardship over the resources that God has given you. If you're naturally a spender, then the need is going to be to watch where your money goes, to decide ahead of time what you're going to spend your money on, to not always be really impulsive about the way you spend your money. So maybe have a think, where are you on this spectrum and what is the challenge for you wherever you stand? Whatever finance God's entrusts us with, for us to be faithful with that. And then lastly, in this section on taking personal responsibility for our finances, the last thing I'd say is this, is to give. I love this principle in Ephesians 4:28. It's just just a great little verse, this one. Paul writes this: "Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need." That's a great little picture there of the kingdom of God. It takes people who are stealing and turns them 180 degrees around into those who give to others. The idea is that we each get so good at taking responsibility for our finances that we then have something to share with others. Sure, give 10% to your local church. You know, that's a given, and Simon will talk about that next time. But that's only really where the adventure begins. Your tithe is only really the start of the adventure. Look to have some fun with the money that you've allocated to give. I heard of one couple who had what they called the Waffle House Ministry. And in the States, waffle houses are very cheap places to eat, so people on low incomes will go and eat there. And they would save up money in order to give away to somebody in the Waffle House. And they would pray and say, you know, Holy Spirit, point out to us who you want us to give the money away to. And so, they talked about one time where they went for a meal and they sat down, and the waitress who was serving them looked tired and haggard, a young woman, and was at least eight and a half months pregnant. And they said, you don't spend all day on your feet waiting on tables, 8 months pregnant, unless you really need the money. So that day, I think they spent $20 on the meal and left the waitress a $300 tip as evidence of the goodness of God. You know, when good people get money, things start to change. Wouldn't it be great to manage your finances in such a way as to be able to have some fun with giving? To be able to do a bless and run for somebody, or just to spread around a little bit what God has given you. How we handle money tells a story a bit of what's going on in our hearts. What story are your bank statements telling at the moment? Let's make sure that we take responsibility wherever we can to carry our own load, to take responsibility for our own financial lives. So that's the first principle that Paul is mentioning there. But I believe there's a second one here. It's this whole area of bearing one another's burdens. Paul promotes this alongside the idea of taking personal responsibility within just a few verses of one another. And it's this idea that when we face overwhelming burdens, overwhelming situations, that we are then there for each other. Notice Paul assumes that from time to time we'll have burdens, and that we'll let people help us. Some of us, you need to kind of dwell on that for a moment. You'll actually let people help you. And for some of us Brits, that's not the easiest thing. A famous theologian, John Stott, says this in very simple terms. Notice the assumption which lies behind this command. Namely, that we all have burdens and that God does not mean us to carry them alone. Some people try to, he says. Too right. I remember a lady coming to our door one evening, and things had got so bad financially with her and her husband that they couldn't even afford to buy nappies for their child. And she turns up on our doorstep in tears. The husband had kept things quiet and let things get worse and worse until finally, in desperation, he sent his wife round to us to ask for help. Fortunately, we had a pack of nappies, and we'd just been to banks. We had some cash to hand. But I remember thinking, how sad. You know, how sad that your pride stopped you from asking for help sooner. We could have helped him much earlier. We could have taken him to see a debt counselor or done all sorts of things, helped them with budgeting or whatever. If things start to get bad, can I ask you, speak to someone soon? I know it's not easy, but please, please don't carry it alone. Tell your small group. That's the first port of call. And for goodness sake, don't leave it too long. One single mum in the church handled a similar situation very differently. And she described what it was like for her to lean on others. And she sent me this email that I'm going to put up on the screen. She says this: I've never been massively motivated by money, probably because I've never had much, and thought that I was used to making ends meet, until I found myself 2 years ago in the unfortunate position of my marriage breaking down and finding myself with four kids to support, a mortgage to pay, and no income. It was then that I really learned what it means to struggle financially. Initially, I managed by tightening our belts and going without, But as time went on and more things went wrong in the house and with the car, it became impossible to split what little money I had 1,000 different ways. And I got in more and more of a financial muddle. And it got to the point where I couldn't even afford to buy food for more than a day or two at a time. It felt such a desperately difficult time. And much as friends rallied round and cooked meals and did what they could, I knew I was going to have to swallow my pride and ask the church for help. So an incredibly painful phone conversation followed, where I wailed my way through the next half hour, explaining to one of the leaders how I wasn't able to cope financially. It was such a difficult thing for me to do. I felt like I had failed to provide for my family. I felt embarrassed and humiliated having to ask for help. I'm going to pause it there. We're going to pick it up in a moment. But I guess the point off the back of that is, if we're to bear one another's burdens, then we've got to know what those burdens are. And maybe even tonight you need to take that step of telling somebody the situation you're in. Perhaps chatting to Edmund and Lindsley at the back, letting them know the situation that you find yourself in. But the last thing is this, bearing one another's burden. Once someone tells us of a need, and they've done all they can to carry responsibility for it, then we all draw alongside and help carry that burden with them. We respond as a family. Now, we've got a central pot of money that in the big church budget that we call the Care Fund, and it's specifically there to help people who are in need. Last year, we overspent on that budget for the first time, which gives an indication of the times that we live in. And so this year, we've increased the amount of money that's going into that. And you could always give directly into that pot if you wanted to help people who are in need in the church. But I guess it can't always be about a central pot of money. I think it has to be far more relational than that. It can't just resource everything from one central pot. It needs to be about us as individuals and small groups standing alongside people who are going through difficult times. A bit like Acts, where it said in Acts 2 that there was no one in need amongst them. Let me leave you with the second half of that mum's email, because I think it says all about what we're trying to do, what we're looking to do in bearing one another's burdens. This is how she goes on to describe the phone call that she had. She says this, "But my tears were met with such incredible sympathy and compassion that those feelings were immediately alleviated, and an enormous sense of relief that I now no longer had to carry this massive burden on my own flooded over me. I think as I did that and gave up trying to do things in my own strength, it was like the floodgates were opened for God to be able to pour out his incredible mercy and kindness on us as a family." I haven't got on the screen, but then she goes on to say this. "That very evening, people from the church turned up on our doorstep with bags of groceries. And in the weeks that followed, God provided the money we needed to get our car through its MOT, clear our overdraft. We were bought a new washing machine, and then someone else paid for an extended warranty on it. Money came in for a holiday and shoes for the kids. This amazing provision continued. As we approached Christmas, I felt really nervous about how we were going to manage and had warned the kids that we were going to have to keep things simple. But actually, the reality was that God provided over and above our wildest dreams. Money arrived for presents and for food. Cash came through the door on more than one occasion. And so we ended up not being able to have an amazing debt-free Christmas. We had enough money left over to replace the old trampoline that had died. And I was left staggered by God's goodness and so grateful for the amazing journey and adventure of God's provision for my kids and me that I've been able to experience. I remember commenting to a friend that I didn't know how people walk through stuff like this without being part of a church family and experiencing the church's care and God's kindness to us has been like an incredible lifeline. Simon Holly so rightly pointed out to me one Sunday as I cried with him about how horrible it was having to ask for and accept help, that yes, I may need help now, but there will come a time when the shoe will be on somebody else's foot and I would be the one in the position to offer help and support. And that is so true. This whole experience has left us amazed by God's and the church's generosity. I feel like we've learned so many lessons in these last few years about what it means to really be part of the church family and about how God has promised that we will never go without and not be in need and how he loves nothing more than to constantly surprise us by his extravagant provision. And lastly, I think that God has challenged me about being creative in my generosity. Yeah, I may not be able to give much financially right now, but I can still choose to be generous with the things like my time and my effort and sharing my home. And through that, know what it is to bless those around me. As I share that, I realize that that hasn't been everyone's experience. And maybe some of us are disappointed with the level of support we've received in our time of need. But I guess my point is, let's make that everyone's experience. We get to choose what kind of culture we have in this church. And one of the things we're wanting to do is to have this culture of acceptance and generosity. They're two of the things that we're going after. I don't know how this year will work out financially for all of us. I think there are some tough times ahead. But what I do know is that we'll face it together. We'll take responsibility for our own actions, sure, yeah. But we'll carry each other's burdens and also know that beneath that is the safety net of God's provision that he offers to us. So as we close tonight, I'd love you to think about what will your response be? You know, what is it that God's been wanting to say to you tonight? Is it about the whole saving and spending spectrum? Is it about getting out of debt? Is it about having the courage to go and speak to someone about your financial situation? Or is it maybe that you're to become increasingly generous and look for opportunities to bless those around you, maybe even give in secret into the church's care fund?